Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Adios, America. I'm Gordon Deal with Nicole Murray. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
People of working age who feel life in the States is getting too expensive are looking outside the U.S. for affordability. Here where?
Artificial intelligence could play a role in preventing future bridge disasters like the one in Baltimore. We'll explain how.
On the retail front, what gold bars and air fryers have in common at Costco.
And the latest trend in wellness travel.
An individual sort of one-off treatment could cost anywhere from, I would say, we saw prices ranging from the high 100s to, you know, $1,200 for ozone therapy, $1,800 for an early detection cancer test, which one resort is offering.
Alex Janin at the Wall Street Journal on the poolside vacation that falls somewhere between a spa trip and a visit to the doctor's office. Well, there's an emerging cohort of Americans who, fed up with the cost of living at home, are seeking a better quality of life elsewhere. They swap advice on Reddit boards like Amerexit and I Want Out, and they consult with concierge relocation service providers. More from Kelly Maria Corducci, contributor to Business Insider. Kelly, what have you discovered?
Well, one thing I figured out was how difficult it actually is to estimate how many Americans live abroad. There's no really accurate count, so it's difficult to kind of trace trends in a very factual way. What we can sort of piece together from the information that we do have is, there are different associations of Americans abroad that have their own estimates, and those estimates have increased over the last few years. And we also know that way more Americans have an active passport now than ever before. So just like to put this into perspective, I thought this was super interesting. In 1994, 10% of Americans had passports. And now there's a passport in circulation for pretty much one out of every two Americans. So that's like just a tremendous jump in the span of one generation. So we know that Americans are more mobile, and we also know that there are a lot of American expats in different places where there are a lot of expats from a lot of the world. So we can kind of put this together to paint a picture. And on top of that, you also just have tons of these online boards, Reddit communities, just tons and tons of internet forums that, yeah, like I was only able to even find probably a fraction of them.
Oh, goodness.
That are very active. So long story short, this is definitely something that people are interested in. And it's definitely an option that greater numbers of Americans are aware of as something that they could consider if it makes sense for them.
And it's not just a retirement thing anymore, right? This is people like still of working age who are deciding, I can't afford it here.
Yeah, no, it's not just people of retirement age. And that might actually be the biggest change over the last few years. So I spoke with a financial planner who works with a lot of expat clients. And he told me that his clientele is mostly people of working age. They're mostly 30s, 40s. They're moving abroad either to work for an office for the company that they work for that's based somewhere else, or they're just deciding to work remotely, freelance, and figure it out from there. But yeah, they're not living off of their savings is what he told me.
Yeah. Wow. We're speaking with Kelly Maria Corducci, contributing writer to Business Insider. Her piece is about more and more Americans deciding that the only way to get ahead is to leave the United States. And there are companies that cater to this now, right? We've got this little cottage industry.
Yeah. So that's a really interesting development that's cropped up in the last several years. A lot of people who have moved abroad and have realized that they could potentially help support themselves by sharing the tricks of the trade with other people who are interested in this lifestyle, because there are a lot of logistics to consider. There's tax implications. There's just financial stuff. There's cultural stuff. There's visa stuff. There's a lot to juggle and to keep in mind, and also just choosing where to go, whether to stick in one place or to move around. So there are all these different individuals and small companies that have emerged in the last handful of years to provide this information to people who are interested. And then there are also, financial planners and various service providers who have targeted this market, realizing that they're an emerging market with kind of specific needs.
Boy, all right, so where do Americans go when they decide they can't afford it here and want to go overseas?
So Mexico is a big one. It's not too far. It's not the cheapest place in the world, but the cost of living is much lower than in the US. The weather's great. So that's been a big draw for people. Also, a lot of Americans speak Spanish, so the language is a plus for many. And Southeast Asia has become a kind of emerging one in recent years. The Philippines is a big kind of emerging destination because English is widely spoken and the cost of living is very, very low.
Thanks, Kelly. Kelly Maria Corducci, contributor to Business Insider. Coming up next, using AI to prevent bridge disasters.
Pure opportunity. It's what Michigan is all about. The opportunity to do more. The opportunity for all businesses to reach their full potential. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to discover all the ways the MEDC is helping Michigan thrive.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at dell.com/welcometonow. That's dell.com/welcometonow. Glad you're with us. On March 26th, the container ship lost power several times and hit the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. Lives were lost, and it's estimated to take $400 million and possibly a decade to rebuild. Tech analyst Rob Enderle at the Enderle Group says we could have avoided the disaster if the port had been properly automated and run by AI. Rob Howe.
The role it could have played, we've been tossing around a concept called Guardian Angel on the automotive autonomous vehicle side for some time. And AI is being used to develop navigation systems for ships, autopilot systems for planes, and of course, autonomous cars for the road. The ship and plane efforts are substantially easier than the road efforts. But what Guardian Angel does in an automotive implementation is it keeps you from doing something stupid. Much like your lane avoidance technology and your crosstalk traffic avoidance technology that exists in cars today, the AI and Guardian Angel would see that maybe you're approaching a corner too fast, maybe you're driving on a road that's icy too fast, and it will automatically step in and reduce your speed so that you avoid the accident, almost disconnecting the driver from the vehicle when it's perceived you're doing something that is unsafe. The same kind of technology, if it was used on that container ship, would have first alerted fairly early on that there was a problem. Certainly would have positioned the ship so it was moving as slowly as possible, given that there was a problem. And then, if it was tied into AI systems in the Port Authority, would have been able to notify the Port Authority, who would then have taken some mitigating factors. In fact, looking at the evidence we have now in terms of the accident, now that it's run into a criminal investigation, it does look like there was knowledge that the ship was at risk even before it left the dock. And in this case, the technology would have alerted that there was a problem. The Port Authority would have been able, at least able to attempt to hold the ship on the dock until the problem was corrected, and that way the ship would have never hit the bridge in the first place. But if you tie it in with robotics, like say robotic tugs, because we saw what happened is when the captain was aware of the problem about 5 minutes out from the bridge, he did alert, which was enough time to get somebody to block the bridge off, but not enough time to get tugs. They called for tugs, but it takes anywhere from an hour to 3 hours to spin up a tug and get it on station, and 5 minutes isn't going to be long enough. But robotic tugs could be on station almost immediately. And again, even with 5 minutes, there's a chance that several magnetically attached robotic tugs could have held the ship off from the bridges, slowed the ship enough so that more tugs could have come into play and the collision could have been stopped.
Interesting. We're speaking with Rob Enderle, founder and principal analyst at the Enderle Group. We're talking about how artificial intelligence may have prevented the Key Bridge collapse. So going forward, if they were to incorporate AI in the construction of the new bridge, what ships would have to be, I guess, dialed into something, right? Bridge itself, anything in the water, I guess, stuff in the port, they have to be one giant, integrated system or not necessarily?
Yeah, kind of what we have manually with air traffic control. And we do have it with port authorities where the ships are directed and are in communication with the port authorities that are coming out, except a lot of this would be automated. And so you're not dealing with the lag that typically exists when you've got people. Cause, you know, person's got to identify the problem. They've got to raise it up to the captain. The captain's got to make a decision of whether to contact port authority, what they're going to do. And all of this, the clock's ticking. And with an AI system, an integrated AI system, as soon as a problem is identified, then port authority is notified, and resources start getting spun up in case that problem becomes a catastrophic. So that allows the port authority to respond much more quickly. And as I said, in this particular case, it probably would have held the ship to the dock, because clearly the problem that resulted, at least right now we believe the problem that resulted in the collision actually occurred before the ship left the dock. And recognize with a lot of commercial vessels, be they planes, ships, or trucks, folks are compensated on timely delivery of goods. And so the crew is very motivated to work through a problem and to ignore a problem in order to get underway and get the goods to the other port on time. They'll be penalized if they're late. They're penalized if they use too much fuel. So the incentives surrounding the crew kind of motivate them to make mistakes like this. And of course, one mistake like this overcomes any of the savings they might have had in terms of fuel or time by trying to rush everything. We're into enough damage where the carrier, where the company that fields these ships could end up having to go bankrupt to avoid the liability.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, founder and principal analyst at the Enderle Group. Coming up next, the trend of wellness vacations.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for spending time with us. People who are fixated on optimizing their personal health are pursuing travel activities that they hope will help them stay healthier for longer. It's part of a broader interest in longevity that often extends beyond traditional medicine. Here's this weekend's Nicole Murray.
So here to talk about the longevity vacation, poolside lounging with an IV drip, Wall Street Journal reporter Alex Janin. So let's start with the basics. What is a longevity vacation?
So it really runs the gamut. There are some more typically what you might associate with sort of a spa or a wellness vacation. And all of this is sort of set against a really booming market for global wellness tourism, which is actually expected to surpass $1 trillion in 2024, according to an estimate from the nonprofit Global Wellness Institute. So some of these things you might think about, you know, detoxification massages or longevity facials. They may use special ingredients but be more typically associated with spa treatments you might ordinarily think of. Others, you know, they're more medical. Some of these resorts are now offering anything from intravenous infusions to ozone therapy to stem cell therapy. And then others are more lifestyle focused and sort of centered around, you know, seminars and discussions about learning the secrets from centenarians. And that's, you know, sort of based on this excitement around Blue Zones and the sort of Blue Zone Netflix hit series.
Okay. I'm scared to ask this, but what kind of a price tag does some of this stuff come with?
Yeah, so as you can imagine, I mean, really a lot of the resorts that are implementing this are more on the higher end. They're catering to wealthier travelers for the most part, just like many standalone longevity clinics that aren't associated with resorts or travel do.
Yeah.
An individual, you sort of one-off treatment could cost anywhere from, I would say, we saw
prices ranging from the high 100s to, you know, $1,200 for ozone therapy, $1,800 for an early detection cancer test, which one resort is offering. Packages, including a multi-day package at the Four Seasons Resort Maui, focused on longevity, will cost about $44,000.
Wow.
So it runs the gamut. I mean, my colleague who covers travel spoke to one travel company that's prioritizing longevity now. They arranged a $250,000 week-long vacation for a family of three to Okinawa, which is one of these, you know, blue zones that focused on sort of meditation and cooking classes, you know, sort of dedicated to the secrets of centenarians. So more on the high end.
I would have imagined so. That's exactly why I was scared to ask that. Can I ask what medical professionals are saying about this?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, you know, for the most part, especially those that are operating within the U.S., you've got certified practitioners administering the more medical treatments. So registered nurses, nurse practitioners, a lot of times these resorts will have sort of one or two MDs, too, that are sort of overseeing the process. Those in traditional medicine, for the most part, say travelers should be really wary of the promises and the purported effects of these treatments. They say they're very, very unlikely to be FDA approved. Some of them that are more invasive, those that involve, you know, puncturing the skin, like, it, you know, like an IV, stem cell therapy, these also carry a degree of risk, right? The treatment, you know, sort of the vitamins or the compounds that are in the therapies could interact with travelers' medications that they're already taking. There's the risk of contamination or infection when you're puncturing the skin. And again, reiterating that they're very unlikely to be FDA approved, which means there's just very little to no oversight. So you're sort of leaving it up to, you know, you're leaving it up to the discretion of the resort spa managers and the resorts themselves to determine, you know, what compounding pharmacies are they maybe getting some of these things from. And, you know, even if consumers know that there's a degree of risk, it's hard for them to know what questions to ask.
Yeah.
They preach caution across the board.
That's this weekend's Nicole Murray with Wall Street Journal reporter Alex Janin. Coming up next, why oil prices are rising. Make this the year you kick a bad habit. Ever tried and failed? Yeah, me too. Here's a new strategy. Try Fume. It's not about giving up. It's about switching up. Fume takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. I have one. It's really cool. Fume is a habit you're free to enjoy and makes replacing your nasty habit easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, helpful for de-stressing. Visit tryfume.com/morning. That's F-U-M, Fume. Try the Journey Pack at tryfume.com/morning. Fume is giving listeners 10% off when they use my code morning to start the good habit. tryfume.com/morning. Plus, Fume's just released a magnetic stand for your Fume, so there's no more losing it around the house. It's built with fidgeting in mind. You can spin your Fume around on it. tryfume.com/morning. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Nicole Murray. Coming up this half hour, gas prices march north, how Costco casts a spell on you, and how to become the most disliked person at the gym. We'll have that story in about 15 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built in Michigan. Discover how the Michigan Economic Development Corporation can help your business thrive at michiganbusiness.org/radio. Gasoline prices are expected to rise over the next few days, but not necessarily because of uncertainty overseas in the Middle East. Insight from Tom Kloza, Global Head of Energy Analysis at Oil Price Information Service. Tom, where are prices going?
Well, we're going higher because there's probably about a dozen states that are transitioning either yesterday, today, or tomorrow to the summer gasoline. And that summer gasoline is about 30 cents more expensive. So if you throw that in with all the worries about our Iranian hostilities against Israel, you've got the recipe for a spring hike and probably a spring top as well.
Okay. So revisit some basics here. Why is it that we use these blends of gas in the summer?
Well, we use the blend of summer gasoline because some of the components that are baked into the winter gasoline formula have issues with ozone and with volatility. So we have to switch away from those because we're going to have 90 and 100 degree temperatures. And some of those components, you might think of something like butane, which you use on a lighter perhaps, but it's very, very cheap and you can't use it after April 15th in the formula for gasoline.
Oh, I don't think I ever heard that explanation. So bring the Middle East back into the conversation here. There was not a huge reaction after the Iran attack on Saturday because there was minimal damage to Israel, right? Now what? What are we watching for now?
Well, last year, 2022 to 2023, we hit the bottom in December 13th, and we hit the top of the market for the first half on April 12th. So last Friday could be the highest numbers we see for futures until the second half of the year. My sense is you're going to continue to see retail move up because wholesale has. But we're probably close to the eighth or ninth inning of this first half 2024 rally. When you see a lot of predictions of $4 and $5 and the highest gas prices ever, that's when you know that probably the top is in.
Okay, so what about this Middle East uncertainty? If that stays, what does that mean for the price of oil and therefore perhaps gas?
There's probably about a $5 or $6 per barrel, or maybe a 25 cent per gallon premium on gas prices right now and on crude oil prices. Again, history shows that these numbers are very tidal. They tend to almost always go up in March and April. And if you're long in the gasoline futures market, you tend to think like you're riding Secretariat back in 1973. But if you're long gasoline when Kentucky Derby comes around, you feel like a horse is you-know-what.
We're speaking with Tom Kloza. He's the global head of energy analysis at Oil Price Information Service. We're talking about rising gas prices. The cheapest in the country versus the most expensive in the country?
Well, the most expensive is easy. That's in California, and there's a lot of prices there, about $5.50. And as temperate as I am about the gasoline price forecast, I'm not particularly temperate for western states like California, Nevada, and Arizona. They just don't have enough refining to handle demand. At the Gulf Coast, you could probably still buy gasoline for close to $3. Those numbers will probably disappear for a while, but they'll come back in the middle of the summer. And then we have to worry about hurricane season and all the other things that come with intense temperatures in August and September.
And explain that then. Why is hurricane season a concern with regards to the price of gasoline?
Well, you saw a lot of reports on the weekend about the Strait of Hormuz, where about 20 million barrels a day of oil goes out to the rest of the world. Very quietly but significantly, the U.S. Gulf Coast of Mexico has become the second major choke point. We export about 12 million barrels a day of crude, various hydrocarbons, and refined products. So if we get a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico, and there's about 10 million barrels a day of refining on the coast there, it can have some really colossal consequences.
Which would mean what? Prices could go where?
Which would mean a temporary surge in prices, not just for the U.S., but the rest of the world.
Thanks, Tom. Tom Kloza, Global Head of Energy Analysis at Oil Price Information Service. Coming up next, the retail magic of Costco. Hey, it's Gordon Deal, and if you're tired of having the same thing over and over again every meal, do what I did and try Factor. Factor brings you chef-crafted gourmet meals ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from over 35 weekly menu options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Factor's ready-to-eat meals mean no prep and no mess, using the most premium ingredients like truffle butter and filet mignon. Customize your plans to fit your life. pause or adjust deliveries anytime. And for April, you can celebrate Earth Day all month long. Just look for the badge to find your favorite low-carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/deal50 and use code DEAL50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code DEAL50 at factormeals.com/deal50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Factormeals.com/deal50 and use code DEAL50. Hey, glad you're with us. Why don't we always seemingly walk out of big box stores with more items than were on our list? Retail and marketing experts say a warehouse chain like Costco casts its spell on customers in a variety of ways. Here's Charles Passy, reporter at MarketWatch. Charles, what about Costco gold bars and air fryers?
Well, you know, we've heard a lot about Costco and gold bars in the last few weeks. So, you know, it turns out that, I mean, Costco's been selling these gold bars, these 1 ounce gold bars, for a few months now. But, you know, reports started coming out that they're selling up to 200 million of them a month. I mean, that's a lot of gold. Yeah. And, you know, I started thinking, why is everybody getting so nutty about these Costco gold bars? And I immediately flashed on the most important thing I could think of, which is the fact that I bought an air fryer that I didn't need at Costco about 5 years ago. So, I mean, I've used the thing about 10 times or whatever. And, you know, it got me thinking, you know, what is it about Costco that gets people to buy stuff? And one might argue buy stuff that they don't really need. I mean, people might want the gold. People might love their air fryer. But I'm thinking there are people who end up, you know, Costco is a very powerful force as a retailer. And they just employ a lot of good techniques to get people to buy things. You know, sometimes it's where they position things in a store. Mm-hmm. You know, the air fryer was front and center for me, but there may be other factors involved.
Well, you said it best. I think you called it like the Costco spell.
Right. They cast a spell on you or whatever, you know. And what one marketing expert explained to me is it's all about abundance. You know, Costco sells a lot of things. I mean, yes, so does Walmart. But, you know, Costco goes from toilet paper to air fryers to gold bars in one fell swoop or whatever. And there are very few retailers that are that really do that. And as a result, that overabundance kind of triggers us to think, well, I'll just buy there. You know, I mean, it kind of gets those salivary glands, those retail salivary glands, you know, going or whatever. And of course, the other factor is that their pricing is terrific. You know, so people think, well, I'm getting a bargain, so I'll just buy it, you know, whatever. They don't necessarily think maybe I'm spending on something that I don't necessarily want or need. They just think I'm getting a bargain. And by the way, that even extends to the gold, as Costco explained to me. So basically, Costco is charging, you know, according to reports, about 2% above markup for the gold. But, you know, think about this. If you're a Costco executive member, you automatically get a 2% rebate. So it already brings the cost down to essentially the price of gold. But if you use a Costco rebate card, a Visa card, you get another 2%. And other you know, Visa cards that have or credit cards that have various structures might work as well. So think about it. You're actually buying the gold for less than the actual price of gold. I mean, wow. Pretty good deal, except you got to ask yourself, do you really want that gold?
Right. We're speaking with Charles Passy, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch. His story is called What Do Costco's Air Fryers and Gold Bars Have in Common? As he found out, quite a lot. I can't believe I'm going to ask this, but are gold bars actually a loss leader for Costco?
Well, I mean, it would seem to be the case. If Costco's not making any money on them, or at the very least, they're making at best a 2% markup, you know, it's kind of like gold bars are the equivalent of, you know, the $1.50 hot dog and soda combo for Costco. You know, it gets people in the door, or more importantly, it gets them to retain their membership. I mean, Costco makes a lot of its money from its membership fees. You know, think about it. You don't pay 60, the fees range from 60 to 120. You don't pay $60 a year to shop at Walmart. I mean, so the membership fees are very significant to Costco's bottom line. So yeah, the gold bars, you know, they talk about, you know, you can buy stamps at Costco below cost.
Thanks, Charles. Charles Passy, reporter at MarketWatch. Coming up next, filming yourself at the gym. As a business owner, you have necessary expenses, but some quick math might reveal that you're spending on items that are narrowing your profit margin. Get a smarter business plan with NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system. You have access to accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR all in one platform. With NetSuite, everything can be accessed in the cloud from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and you improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math and see how your company can benefit from NetSuite. Visit netsuite.com/Gordon. NetSuite has proven ways to cut costs and boost performance. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. netsuite.com/Gordon. That's netsuite.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend here. Smartphones, as you know, are interrupting workouts and causing privacy concerns. Anne-Marie Alcantara, personal tech reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says instructors and fellow gym goers are fed up. Anne-Marie, what have you found?
Yeah, so, you know, we're no strangers to seeing phones everywhere we go, but now they're showing up during what some might consider a moment where a phone shouldn't be, workout classes. You know, you're doing a yoga pose, a bar pose, whatever it might be, or boxing, and then someone is filming themselves next to you for their own either personal content or because they are a content creator, and people aren't exactly happy about it.
All right, you open the story talking with this 27-year-old yoga instructor in New York named Emily Holtzman. What's she saying about all this?
Emily's a yoga instructor, and she's taught more than 700 yoga classes in New York, and she is just sort of fed up with the situation and has, you know, put up a sign outside of her, you know, class saying no phones, please. She just finds that people are getting more distracted. Students themselves in her classes are coming up to her telling her, you know, that they're distracted by someone else's screen, and she just wants us to calm down a little bit with it.
Part of the issue here, I guess maybe a good part of the issue, is privacy and or consent, right? You're filming yourself, but maybe you're capturing somebody else in the background.
Precisely. Like, it's one thing, you know, to take your selfie or do whatever it is you want and, you know, document your own fitness journey. But someone behind you or next to you who is inadvertently caught in your shot may not exactly enjoy, you know, seeing their red face from working out or whatever it might be, you know, in that same photo or video.
Some chains have prohibited the all like outright, correct?
Yes, chains such as 24 Hour Fitness and the New York Sports Club prohibit filming of other people without their consent.
We're speaking with Anne-Marie Alcantara, personal tech reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called Stop Filming Yourself at the Gym Already. For some people, though, it is their lifestyle, right? Maybe they're an influencer on social media, so this is kind of part of their job. What do they do?
Yes, so for many content creators, you know, it is quite literally part of their job. They, you know, go to these workout classes or gyms and they get, you know, either pay or a comped class to film themselves, you know, working out and showing off the equipment or the class, whatever it might be. And so what many of them do is, you know, they will try to either sit at the back or the side of a class so that they don't catch anyone on camera. And if they do, you know, one person I spoke to mentioned that they'll, you know, ask that person for permission to use the footage and try to make sure that that person, you know, still feels comfortable and, you know, doesn't get unnerved by the situation.
The one yoga instructor toward the tail end of your story also weighed in on this, just about phones in general, correct?
Yes, that's another problem that some instructors talk to me about, that people are just bringing their phones in to classes and yoga sessions and scrolling Instagram, shopping, whatever it might be. And yeah, sometimes when instructors, you know, ask people to put them away, they get yelled at.
Is the problem getting worse, or is like exposure like your stories or these confrontations and videos online, is that somewhat addressing the issue at all?
Hopefully it does. I know that, you know, it seems like a lot of people resonated with Emily's video on TikTok, you know, regarding their own feelings about it. So maybe it'll do something, maybe it won't. Unclear, but, you know, just make sure to watch yourself if you are in a workout class and don't end up in a video if you don't want to.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. Anne-Marie Alcantara, personal tech reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, the effort to save Stumpy in D.C.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now. That's Dell.com/welcome to now.
Well, we'll finish with this. The nation's capital is prematurely grieving over the expected loss of Stumpy, the city's favorite little cherry tree on the tidal basin. Stumpy's not much more than a stump, but its size doesn't stop its small tangle of branches from bursting into bloom, along with all the other cherry trees, part of Washington's cherry blossom landscape in spring. But USA Today says news of a planned rehabilitation of the tidal basin threatened to spell the end of Stumpy's days. The project would require the uprooting of 158 cherry trees, Stumpy included, to defend the remaining cherry trees against aging infrastructure and rising sea levels. But a new collaboration to grow clones of Stumpy could allow the tree to live on in new form. The plan will see horticulturists plant clippings from Stumpy's living parts. Eventually, the trees could be returned to the tidal basin and replanted. Meanwhile, the original Stumpy will be mulched and returned to the National Mall to, quote, provide root protection and soil enrichment for living trees for generations to come. That'll do it for this hour. For Nicole Murray, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.
What does the future of mobility in Michigan sound like? It's the sound of new EV charging stations at our state parks. Discover all the ways MEDC is driving next-gen mobility in Michigan at michiganbusiness.org/radio.